Session number 21577, Rule 4.
Sam Bowell, Rule 4.
So I was in hospital in Lagos with this, and I got the orderly to take a sample, take one of my samples. So, and of course the sergeant in the medical corps was quite, he thought this was quite funny. It was his idea anyway. So about an hour later, 2 hours later, the doctor arrived and he said, stopped at my bed. He said, by that time I was a petty officer, by the way, I'd been promoted. He said, Petty Officer Burwell, we've found out what really is wrong with you. I thought, bloody hell. So I said, yes, sir. He said, you've got tropical worms. He said, we've just done an analysis of your latest sample, and you are suffering from tropical worms, which we're going to have to treat and keep you in hospital for at least another 5 days. So I said, oh, I'm sorry to hear that, you know. I said, how about the malaria and that? He said, well, you're clear of that, and you're not too bad with dysentery now. He said, but we'll have to keep you in. And so that was that. So when he'd got her, I said to this sergeant, I said, did you hear what he said? He said, yes. He said, I forgot to tell you. He said, these orderlies have always got dysentery, and they've always got tropical worms. But my ship sailed, and my treatment for tropical worms was horrendous. It was castor oil and no food. Oh dear, it just about killed me. So there we are, I managed to get clear of the ship sailed, and I had to wait in Lagos, as I say, which was a nice place. In fact, my son has just been working in Lagos for 2 years. And I went to the show base in Lagos. And there they didn't know what to do with a radar mechanic, you know, because it was just a holding place for sailors who were sort of released from hospital or whatever. It wasn't a real base. So they put me in charge of the show patrol, which meant every night I had 6 ratings and then picked ratings up from any ships they were in port, because if shore patrols usually had people from ships, their own ships, so if there was any arresting to be done, they could be arrested by their own ship's company, you see. So if you were in charge, PO in charge of the shore patrol, I had a patrol of people, some who didn't speak English, there were other nationalities, and people off various ships. And I did that for about 6 weeks. Where in that 6 weeks, I managed never ever to get to an incident while it was still going on. It was quite amusing, really. We used to go into the local cinema liked to be there, because sailors sometimes got drunk and went to the cinema, in the cinema. So he always reserved seats at the back of the cinema for the show patrol, you see. So I used to take the show patrol to the cinema and watch the film, and just check up now and then, because of course we hadn't mobile telephones and things like that. We had one or two bits of trouble which could have got awkward, but we managed, you know, to always be late on the scene like the police are nowadays, you know, just managed to let them control the tempers a bit before we got there. And it was quite funny, I was on the show base and I had this local lad looking after me, and he came one day and he had such a bad cold, so bad, he said he'd had it for a while, he'd got nothing for it. Well, I had some tablets the doctor had given me for boils, so I gave him a couple of these. I thought, oh, he was really pleased, and the next day he took me, he didn't have a cold. So he was so pleased, he said to me, oh, you come home with me and meet my sister. For giving him a couple of tablets, he wanted me to meet his sister, you know. They're the sort of silly things. While I was in Lagos, I took part in a half-mile race. They had a sports day, so I thought, well, I'll try and take part. And I had a big beard, now quite old, really. And I came last in this half-mile race, But at least I took part and finished. And one of the natives came up to me, "Never mind, old papa," he said. "There were younger men than you dropped out." I was exactly 21, I think it was, 22. So after this little episode ashore, well, one of the jobs they gave me one day, they said, they suddenly found a job for a radio mechanic, because I did nothing during the day, I just did these patrols at night. They found a job for a radio mechanic that somewhere up country, they wanted a radio mast erecting for some purpose or other. And they said, "Well, we've a radio mechanic." Well, I'd never erected a radio mast in my life. You see, on ships, all the masts are attached to all the radio equipment's attached to the mast. And this was a mast that needed no end of gears and this, that and the other. So one day, they came and picked me up with two big transporters, no army people, all civilians, and went out to this site, and I was supposed to take charge while these blokes erected the radio mast. And I didn't know where to start, but they did. So they just got on with it and erected it, and that was it. I don't know. I didn't know anything about it at all. And there we are, that's the sort of thing that happened. Yeah, I rejoined the Hydrangea on these... On these runs up and down the coast, and the normal commission on a corvette was 18 months, and by this time we were drawing near to our 18 months. But although it was quiet on the coast, it was potentially very dangerous, because with just a corvette escort, and there were armed raiders running down the south coast, running down the west coast of Africa. In the South Atlantic, there were armed raiders there, and we'd only got to have come across one of them, and we'd have been shot to pieces, no doubt about it, because we'd no speed, we'd no attacking potentiality whatsoever, except one 3-inch gun. The other thing on the ship, it did strike me at the time, that I was a trained gunner, and you know, I knew how to captain a gun and look after it. Now, if we'd been damaged or hit and people wounded, I could possibly have taken over the gun and carried on firing and the like, but the Navy didn't see any overlap between ranks. Although I'd done all this, there was no way was I allowed near the gun. I wasn't allowed, it wasn't part of my life at all to do any gunnery, although I'd trained in it and proved quite competent with it. And this was, one of the weaknesses of the Navy. They may be getting over it a little bit now if you read Navy News, but I think it was a big weakness that they didn't try to, because there was a lot of time wasted hanging about on ships when you weren't in action or when you weren't in two watches. And it could have been, this time could have been spent teaching people, even teaching people other things to do with shore. But the officer class were not interested in that. They showed no interest really in the ordinary ratings, trying to improve their education or whatever, which I think is a big weakness. I think they've overcome that now, because I've been on several ships in the last few years. I regularly go on HMS York, and there's such a big difference now between, shall we say, the attitude of petty officers, chiefs, and the younger officers. They all seem to mix together as one. It's absolutely quite different altogether, which is a good thing. Anyway, we eventually left Freetown, went to the Azores, from the Azores to Bermuda, where the ship did a refit. And we're in Bermuda in December, hoping to get finished, to get home in time for Christmas. I had quite a good time in Bermuda. I met up with people who were from Hornsea in East Yorkshire. They called the bungalow Hornsea, and the man had been in the army in the First War and been in Bermuda and got to like people and eventually settled down there. And he was, when I was there, he was the recorder of Bermuda and also the organist at the cathedral, which left his wife. He was so busy doing all these things, it left his wife with not much to do, so he used to give me a fiver to take his wife out at night, which is quite enjoyable. And when we left Bermuda, he and his wife gave me around 70 Christmas presents, one for every member of Hydrangea Ships Company, from the captain down. A big hamper of Christmas presents, which I thought was quite something. I also joined a Freemason's Lodge in Bermuda. But it was rather unfortunate, because I joined the lodge and I paid my... I was an accepted brother, I was accepted and everything. And I paid my dues, which by present day money would be something like £800. A lot of money. It was four times my weekly wages anyway, which now would be at least about £800. And I was due to be initiated, and before I could be, my ship was up anchor and had to sail. So I missed out on that. And no way could I ever... It took me 40 years to recover from that, because once you've been accepted by a lodge like that, you've got to be initiated by that lodge. You see, and I couldn't be. I had to go back to Bermuda to do that, so it was a problem. Other lodges didn't want you. They maybe would have done if you'd gone back to square one, not said anything, and started from scratch. But my uncles, who were Freemasons in Hull, advised me on this, and I didn't get anywhere anyway. A few years ago, I joined a York lodge and sort of made up for it. But I'm hoping now to become a country member of the Bermuda Lodge that I was accepted in. I've got the letters all written and all the information together. So I'm hoping to do that. That was Bermuda episode. Anyway, we sailed, due to sail from Bermuda in December to get back to UK for Christmas. And the telegraphist got a fault on the direction finding equipment, which he couldn't repair, couldn't put right. So they sent for the American base. It was an American base in Bermuda, not English. Everything was American. Sent for the American base mechanics, looked at it and said, no, it's too complicated, we can't touch it. So the skipper said, I'm not sailing without my DF equipment, which meant the ship wouldn't be home for Christmas. So he sent for me, and I'd specialised in radar on this ship, you see, I hadn't touched the radar. He said, what do you think, Mick? Could you put this right? I said, well, I'll have a look at it. I had a look at it, and I thought I knew what it was. So I went to him and said, I'll put it right. If you sail, I'll guarantee to have it right in 48 hours. I thought, I'm getting home for Christmas, whatever. So we sailed. And I took this bloody lot to pieces, found the fault and got it right. But it was tongue-in-cheek. So we sailed from Bermuda on our own, right across to... Where did we come into? Oh, we came into London Docks. And I got home for Christmas leave, which was quite something, really. And then I went back to the ship, and they'd got a complete new ship's company, except for certain key ratings. One of them was me. They hadn't got a radio mechanic. So instead of leaving the ship, and I only had a short leave, and I mean full... leave, I had to sail again through the bloody channel on this ship to go up to Tobermory to do with a completely new crew. I mean, they had all the lights showing at night and God knows what. It's a wonder we weren't sunk. Anyway, we had a bit of luck. We hit rough weather in the Irish Sea and she was damaged, and we had to go into Liverpool for repairs, which was good for me in a way. And when we went into Liverpool, one of the first people aboard was my cousin, because my uncle was a compass adjuster by trade, and he had a business in Liverpool, and my two cousins worked for him. And one of the things that had to be seen to when we went into Liverpool was the equipment we had around the ship, degaussing gear, which was the equipment which... which reversed the polarity on magnetic mines, I think. That was what it was for. So he came, And although they were compass adjusters, the degaussing gear, when it was fitted to ships, threw all the magnetic compasses out. I know we had the other compasses, but you'd always got to have backup of magnetic compasses. Well, this big magnetic field they put around the ship, so he came aboard to adjust the compasses, you see, which was quite good. Anyway, the skipper let me go and leave while we were in Liverpool. I was reluctant to go back to the ship, because it was a completely new crew. I'd done my whack, and I thought, well, you know, that's that. And I got a touch of flu, so I sent a telegram to the ship that, I couldn't get back on time, but I thought I would be back within a couple of days. And within an hour of sending that telegram, we had a surgeon lieutenant commander from the Naval Hospital on Beverly Road in Hull Round to see whether this story was true. With a naval ambulance and the lot there. Anyway, he saw it was true. The mother dosed him with cups of tea and chocolate biscuits, and he left me at home and joined the ship 3 days later to find my relief was on board, who was a parson from Scarborough. He was a parson. His brother was a lieutenant commander, and he was joining the ship, his first ship, as a radar mechanic. So I showed him the ropes and left the ship. The skipper gave me a drink and said, I never want to see you again. And that was it. He was joking, though, of course. Lieutenant Commander Swallow. So then, if you want me to go on, please. I then left, went into the HMS Mercury, the communications school. I was a radar and radio mechanic. Well, then they were finding that it was the technology was too much to be able to do both. And the Navy decided to split between radar and radio. So you're either going to be one or the other. Because there are a lot more new radio with the higher frequency radio equipment, which was being used between aircraft and ships, and ships and shore and the like. There were a lot more radio mechanics needed. And radar was getting really very, I mean, it was the big thing. So, you really were going to be one or the other. So I had a choice of becoming a radar mechanic or a radio mechanic. Well, I thought I'd had so many sort of lucky breaks, really, you know, over the years, that I was getting a bit worried that if I was at sea too much, I was going to get killed. I really thought that. So I thought, now, which of the radio and radar are the least likely to go to sea? So, although I got a DSM, I'm a bit of a coward, really. I shouldn't tell you what. You can call this warts and all, can't you? Maybe everybody is, but they don't say so. So, I thought, well, I don't know. I think radio, maybe, because it isn't worth the ship carrying a radio mechanic as such. Nearly all of them are at shore stations where the equipment can be exchanged and there could be service on the shore stations, you see. So I opted for radio. Went up to Butlin's holiday camp at Ayr to start a conversion course from a radio mechanic or radio and wireless to wireless. And I was in a class where all the others were brand new entries into the Navy coming in as radio mechanics. I was the only one with any service whatsoever. And I was a petty officer, they were all ordinary whatever. So I had to take charge of this class. And we did a month up there, then we did another course at Mercury and the like. Well, at the end of it, the officer in charge at HMS Scotia, which put into holiday camp, had put on my papers that I was recommended for return to HMS Scotia as an instructor. So I completed the course, got pretty good marks in it, which I couldn't help really, And I was keen to get good marks because I thought, well, I'm not likely to get a ship blown from under me at HMS Scotia. So, you know, I'll be a bit safer up there.
Where is it?
Butlin's Holiday Camp at Ayr. So I was drafted to HMS Scotia to start teaching radio mechanics. I did a month course up there. And I made sure I was a good instructor. I used to say to the class, you won't like me while you're here, but my job is quite clear. In Germany, there'll be a class of radio mechanics started now, the same as you are. I said, in all the various jobs, there are people training. Now, if I can train you lot to be better than that class in Germany, and everybody thinks the same, we'll win the war. If I can't, we won't. I used to tell them this. So I used to say, whatever I do, it's got one objective in view, to make you better radio mechanics than your opposite number in Germany. And I really gave them a hard time. I used to make them work at night, used to make a double around the parade ground. If they were, you know, I just wouldn't. Some of them were Wren's classes as well. I took Wren's, but I was still the same with them. And I wanted them to be good mechanics, and I wanted me to keep my shore job. So that was it. Because I'd got married, and I'd got a bungalow on the banks of the River Doon with my wife up there, and the war was beginning. The end of the war in Germany came while we were up there, and then the end of the war in Japan, so it was running down anyway.
How do you feel now about having served in the Navy in the Second World War?
Can I tell you one little funny story? While I was up there, we used to have these AVO meters, you know, we used for radio mechanics. And when it came to being released in your class, there'd be maybe about 20 or 30 people going each week in the release class, depending on what mobilisation number you were. Demob number. I was number 28. You know, you all were given a number based on service, etc. Well, they had them all in the cinema with the commanding officer giving them a little talk, and then he got a piece of paper at it, and he said, we've got a problem. He said, there is an AVO meter missing. You know, these meters, they're quite expensive. And these radio mechs, people, if they were radio amateurs and that, they'd pinch anything to do with radio. Normally the honest lads, you know, they'd take valves out of sets, anything. He said, AVO meter missing. He said, and I'm not going to let any of you leave this camp until we get it back. See, because he thought one of them was going and that would be it. Because they were quite expensive things. Well, he said, so if whoever's got it owns up, he said, I will take no action whatsoever as long as it's returned. He said, you can all go. Well, there's a shuffling in the ranks and three blokes step forward. One AVO meter. Gosh. Well, it turned out that they'd misheard him. And they thought he'd said there's some naval meat missing. A lot of them were bunting tossers. They weren't radio people, you see. He thought there was some naval meat missing. Well, the butcher had fixed them up with joints to take home. And so they never got the AVO meter, but they got the naval meat back. And that was the tale. Then I was demobbed and went back home. I was offered a job in the Navy full-time, you know, regular full-time, to have stayed in the Navy in the wireless branch. You know, they have a naval civilian wireless service, and ditto. But I went back to the post office.
So I asked you how you feel about having served in the Royal Navy in the Second World War?
Brilliant. Really pleased to have done it, so long as I've survived. But I feel really sorry for many of the friends I had and people I've known who, you know, lost their lives.
I think you've got a story about Tom Boyd?
Big Tom Boyd. Well, when we were in Gibraltar at the beginning of the war, we served from Plymouth. We had the rough crossing across the Bay and went into Gibraltar, and while the ship was in Gibraltar, was having one or two bits of pieces done, and we were in the dockyard, as it were. Well, Tom saw a ship sailing into Gibraltar, and it was one of his trawlers that they'd leased to the Admiralty during the war. Well, apparently there was a rule that anyone who owned a trawler, if it was leased to the Admiralty, could at any time insist on inspecting it. Any time that was, you know, not too unusual. So Tom, ordinary seaman, Tom Boyd, asked to see the captain for permission to inspect his ship. So he used to wear his hat all on one side. He was a big, big Nordic type. So Tom, surrounded by captains and God knows what, walked aboard his trawler and inspected it. just for cussedness, I think. He was a great bloke. He was captain of our rugby team. And although he's an ordinary seaman, he used to bollock the officers something rotten on the rugby field, you know. They quickly saw that Tom shouldn't stay in the ranks very long. I mean, it was public school. I think he went to St. Bede's, and he'd had a commission in the army anyway, in the Terriers. And, you know, he obviously was officer material of high level. And as I say, he became a commander and got the DSO sent as a... I've got the book there about him. Really a wonderful chap.